This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I am Chinedu Ofor, and here's what's coming up.
Government cannot make decisions on workers or teachers without engaging the respective workforce.
That was Takafira Zhou of the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe. He criticized the government's decision to terminate workers who haven't been vaccinated against COVID-19, calling it an unfair labor practice. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. The Ethiopian government launched airstrikes on the regional capital of Mekele yesterday. The state-run Ethiopian press agency said communication infrastructures were targeted. The United Nations said Secretary General Antonio Guterres was, quote, deeply concerned, unquote, about the potential impact on civilians and the escalation of the conflict in northern Ethiopia. Guterres repeated calls for a halt to the conflict, along with free flow of humanitarian assistance to civilians stranded in the region. Last week, Tigray forces said Ethiopian military had launched a ground offensive to push them out of the Amhara region. The Ethiopian federal government has been engaged in an armed conflict with fighters from the northern Tigray region for nearly a year. A Zimbabwe government statement said civil servants who failed to meet yesterday's deadline to get inoculated against COVID-19 are considered terminated, at least until they get the vaccine. Andy Gondo gives us more on the story.
Agnes Mahomba, the COVID-19 chief coordinator in the president's office, cited the need to protect the public and said unvaccinated civil servants tend to be denied their salaries and allowances. The workers have given a number of reasons for avoiding the jabs, including personal health considerations, religious beliefs, vaccine skepticism, and logistical challenges. Critics say the government's highly controversial mandate infringes on the rights of citizens to decide whether to get the vaccine. Mahomba intimated in an interview with local media that though the affected persons might appeal the measure, the statutory instrument is in effect. Takawafira Joe of the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe called the measure ill-conceived, harsh, and a monument of injustice.
Government has adopted a unilateral and one-armed mandatory position to ban civil servants in general, and the teachers in particular who have not been vaccinated. It is therefore a process of unfair labor practice that cannot be legally enforced or binding. Government cannot make decisions on workers or teachers without engaging the respective workforce.
Zhou maintains teachers did not defy the directive to get vaccinated per se. He says there are a number of reasons ranging from chronic conditions and religion to lack of access. Zhou adds that government's edict is generic and therefore erratic and unlawful at best.
The rightful procedure is that if you want to dismiss a worker, there must be communique written in the name of the worker and the pointing to the dismissal and the reasons for dismissal, that has not been done. So we encourage the government in particular to allow school heads to take stock and barrel of all teachers or workers that have not been vaccinated, also proffering reasons why they have not been vaccinated.
Joe says a number of teachers are willing to be vaccinated but are hampered in various ways. The union has advised its members to report to work until they get a notice in their names telling them to stop. Observers and analysts say the government move is tantamount to victimization, particularly considering how hard-pressed many people are due to long COVID-19 lockdowns.
Because the whole process of vaccination is too centralized and the teachers in remote areas are not able to access points of vaccination. I'm sure you're aware that the vaccine also need to be kept in refrigerators and the like.
Political analyst Effie Ngwe agrees.
We must not forget that even those workers that wanted to be vaccinated could not be vaccinated because of the shortage of vaccines. The vaccines were not readily available everywhere throughout the country at all times. And for much of the population, they could not, especially in rural areas, access the vaccines. So that's another reason besides people having the right to choose whether to be vaccinated or not. The way forward is for government to ensure that the vaccines are readily available.
And others say the competition between public health concerns and individual freedoms must be balanced. They add that the government needs to embrace consultation on such issues of national concern. Reporting for VOA, this is Adegondo in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
Yesterday, clash between Rwandan soldiers and the forces of the Democratic Republic of Congo sent residents fleeing villages in Eastern DRC's Irangongo district. Villages around the town of Kimbumba reported heavy fighting in the morning, although things calmed down in the afternoon. Journalist Jafar Al-Katanti was there on the road with people as they fled their homes. He tells VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson the Irangongo district government and the military give somewhat different accounts of what happened.
According to the deputy administrator of Irangongo, the situation is such that a group of cross-border fraudulent traders have been pursued by the Rwandan army, which unfortunately followed them into the DRC. That is why the Congolese soldiers arrest two of Rwanda's military, and without following any regulation or any protocol, Rwandan soldiers have allowed themselves to enter to the DRC to try to retrieve their men. That's why they fight between them. But according to the army, the spokesperson of the army said about an incursion by Rwandan army beyond 5 kilometers deep into Congolese territory. The Colonel Njike said they were contained until the arrival of the reinforcement of FRDC, and then they returned in Rwanda. The Congolese army said also they repeat the looting of Rwanda's guys because they loot many goods from the Congolese people when in their way to Rwanda. And they promise to speak with the verification mechanism of the International Conference of the Grist-Lac region so that it can investigate in order to find out what was the motivation of Rwandan troops in DRC.
Now, has the Rwandan government said anything?
The Rwandan ambassador to DRC in Kinshasa said the same thing, but he didn't recognize that their soldiers looted in DRC. He regrets that the two armies clashed in DRC, but he doesn't know more about the problem. Our leaders will talk and found a solution.
So to sum up then, make sure I have it clear, what happened was the Rwandan forces were pursuing cross-border traders and followed them into DRC territory. And at that point, that's when they encountered the FARDC, the Congolese troops, and there was a clash, correct?
Before the clash, the FRDC troops captured the two Rwandan guys because they get inside DRC with their weapon and their uniform, what is not correct. And then others, Rwandan military, came to ask to the FRDC those two guys. That's where the clash started.
That was reporter Jafar Al-Katanti, who was on the phone from Goma in the DRC. He was speaking with my colleague, Kate Pound-Dawson. Al-Katanti also reports that residents along the road with Rwanda say Rwandan troops have occupied some villages in the area for several weeks. The border in the region is poorly marked and easily crossed, he said. Unknown gunmen attacked a market in northwest Nigeria on Sunday, killing an estimated 40 people. The governor of Sokoto State, Aminu Bello Tambuwa, confirmed the attack on Goronyo Market, about 90 kilometers from the state capital. Lagos-based Vanguard newspaper quoted residents as saying mostly traders were killed in the 4 p.m. attack and some people were still missing. Bashir Achida, a senior lecturer in the Department of Economics at Usman Danfodio University in Sokoto, spoke with reporter Mike Mbonye about the attack. He says there was no security in place at the time.
Mr. Mike, it is a very unfortunate incident. If you look at what happened, this militants came to that market. It used to be a very big market, but in fact, all villagers around the city converge and every Sunday to transact their normal activities. And these militants came in their numbers and they perpetrated this evil. You can say it is a very unfortunate incident. And we have what we call the structure and the structure of security activities in place. These restrictions are supposed to, in fact, work to help people, but they didn't. Also, the security apparatus that are there, they are supposed to, in a way, sensitize and conscientize people about activities now during this issue of insecurity. Because if you know where Goronyo is, it's just 90-something kilometers away from the city. So, and these people were in that market. I was told they came around 4 p.m. and they have been there up to 7 p.m. and no support, no help was given. So it is quite a very unfortunate incident.
Is it that there was no security or security measures put in place on that market day?
You see, usually, that area, because of how the situations are, the security situation is, you find out that it is really kind of, you have this joint military or joint security task force that are around. You can't say there are securities that are stationed. You don't find them. You only on the way to the market, you find at times security who are on the way. Also, you can say traversing their own businesses. You find them stopping cars and collecting 115 naira from the motorists. But to find out securities that are out there to protect the civilians and the merchants in the market, there is none of that. And the power and the might that these bandits came with, I think it is really powerful that those local security cannot handle. It is really unfortunate. In fact, that was why I talk about the issue of sensitization. And in this period, and I talk about the structure of situation, because these restrictions that are put in place, they are not only there. The government, you can say the government, the state government itself, because you caution the responsibility of the state government. You put some restrictions in place about going to markets, about issues that has to do with movement, but you have not also sensitized people on how to react in the event of this, because most people die as a result of what you call this flying bullet. So they came to the market, they were just sporadically shooting, and people were not told that when you had gunshot, you are to lie down, you understand, and crawl. So people had gunshots and they were running. They were running, and that was how people died. So it was really, they were not even targeting people. They were targeting the commodities they come to cut away with and some food items and what have you. But in the process, they have to shoot. And in that process, they scared people, and a lot of people die as a result of those flying bullets.
What do you think will be the likely effect of this attack on the market and then the immediate environs, on especially those who use it as their means of livelihood?
This market is a hub to local governments, about 5 to 3 local governments. There are people coming from Gada with the Dakens, and there are people also coming from Sabonbrini, Wurumu, Raba, all those areas. It is a market that really a kind of attracts all those villagers, you understand, from far and near, because that's where you find very cheap food items.
That was Bashir Achida, senior lecturer at Usman Danfodio University, speaking by phone with reporter Mike Mbonye. One of South Africa's most powerful politicians is back in court today to face charges of corruption, fraud, money laundering and theft. The case against suspended African National Congress Secretary General Ace Magashule revolves around a 255 million rand or $36 million contract to remove asbestos roofing from houses in Free State Province. Darren Taylor reports that the case against the man known as the Don is the biggest test so far for President Cyril Ramaphosa's pledge to stop corruption in the ANC.
Magashule is accusing Ramaphosa of purposefully delaying his trial to stall his political career. Magashule has presidential ambitions and says the charges against him are a conspiracy designed to end these. Free State University politics professor Setulego Matabisi says it's much too early to write off Magashule as a political force.
Remember, we're talking about somebody who potentially can be the next president of the African National Congress. Some South Africans may blame me for this prognosis, but fact of the matter is we have seen stranger things coming out of the elective conferences of the African National Congress.
Matabisi is referring to the unlikely rise of former President Jacob Zuma, who's also due in court soon on multiple charges of financial crimes. In late 2007, after successfully defending himself against a rape charge and a long list of accusations that he was corrupt, Zuma deposed then-President Thabo Mbeki as ANC leader. A few months later, Zuma was elected president of South Africa. There have been small crowds supporting Magashule at previous brief court appearances, but Matabisi says this isn't significant.
One should be very cautious when trying to link what we see out of court appearances with the actual support that these individuals like Magashule have within the African National Congress.
He doesn't think a high-profile ANC official in the dock on criminal charges is going to damage the party's prospects when the nation votes in less than 2 weeks to elect city and town councils.
The problem with us South Africans, issues such as corruption, issues such as lack of service delivery, seems not to have a significant impact on the outcome of any elections, whether it's a local government election or a national government election. Because if that was the case, the African National Congress would have been history. So despite all the challenges that the ANC is facing, I strongly believe that the ANC will still hold on to the majority of the municipalities. But also what is very...
While that may be true of the ANC's hold on towns in rural areas, independent surveys show a strong chance it could lose some big cities to opposition parties. The ANC's left its campaigning late, expecting the vote to be postponed due to COVID-19. Also, most municipalities it runs are in disarray, failing to provide basic services and racked with corruption and mismanagement. But Matabisi says most South Africans continue to vote with their hearts, not their heads.
You've got those voters who traditionally has been ANC members, the so-called Nelson Mandela legacy voters, the so-called struggle history of the African National Congress. And people will just vote for the ANC on the basis of the name ANC.
He points out that middle and upper class people in the cities tend to vote for opposition parties, while poor, unemployed people in rural areas vote ANC, more out of desperate hope than anything else.
If you look at the majority of South Africa, if you talk about a local municipality, every opportunity centers around the municipality. So people will continue to vote for the ANC to ensure that at least they've got access to a temporary job or so. And unfortunately, this is creating problems for us as a country.
So, says Matabisi, the very factor that some are predicting will eventually destroy the ANC, namely its vast and allegedly corrupt patronage network, is allowing it to keep its grip on the country. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Cameroon's French-speaking towns on the border with the English-speaking western regions are creating militias to stop separatist incursions. The militia says separatists are entering French-speaking towns to steal food and weapons for their movement or acting independently as armed criminals. Muki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Cameroon's military on Monday said it held several top security meetings in the capital Yaoundé to examine the spillover of the separatist crisis from the English-speaking western regions to French-speaking areas. Joseph Betty Asomo is Cameroon's defense minister. Asomo says the military will never allow fighters to transfer the peril they cause in the English-speaking southwest and northwest regions to French-speaking border localities. He says he is reinforcing the military presence and increasing financial and material means to stop the separatists from entering French-speaking towns and villages. Speaking on state radio, Asomo did not disclose the number of troops deployed to stop the separatists. The military says French-speaking regions infiltrated by separatists include Buda, Galim, Babaju, Babisenge, Fumban, Fumbot, and Bafusam. Two of these places, Fumbot and Bafusam, are large commercial areas. The military says there have been at least 60 attacks by separatist fighters in French-speaking localities, with dozens of lives lost. On social media, separatist groups have denied that fighters are looting, but they acknowledge attacks on several military positions, saying that they do so to seize weapons. Rigobert Chinda is a cattle rancher who relocated from Galim to Buda. He says last week, suspected separatists seized 5 cows and money from him. Chinda says civilians live in total fear. He says many people are deserting border villages because of the recent frequent attacks and looting by suspected separatists. Business is at a standstill. To speak the truth, those of us remaining in border localities with English-speaking regions are not comfortable with rising insecurity caused by separatists who are infiltrating, Chinda adds. Defense Minister Asomo said civilians should assist the military by reporting suspects and strangers in their localities. François Franklin Etapa is the most senior government official in Bambutus, the district where Galim is located. Etapa says militia groups have been created in all villages and towns on the border with the English-speaking Northwest to stop the incursions. Etapa says Bambutus is facing repeated assaults from secessionists because of its geographical location near English-speaking regions. He says separatist attacks have dampened the spirits of civilians. He says he has decided to create vigilantes in all villages to help fight separatists who cross over from the English-speaking areas to commit atrocities in French-speaking border areas. Etapa said people should not think that by promoting vigilantes, the country is handing over its duty of protecting citizens to militias. He said the militias should collaborate with traditional rulers, community leaders, the administration, and the military by reporting strangers and armed men in the towns and villages. Civilians and NGOs already contribute food and money to assist the militias. Many of the militia men go out with locally made guns, machetes, and bows and arrows to face intruders. The military also says vigilantes should signal troops when armed men are spotted in the towns and villages. Cameroon's separatists have been fighting since 2017 to create an independent English-speaking state in the majority French-speaking country's western regions. The conflict has cost more than 3,000 lives and forced 550,000 people to flee to French-speaking regions of Cameroon or into neighboring Nigeria, according to the United Nations. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Chinedu in Washington. For all latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. And thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05.